Welcome back to EGOT. Everyone gets a trophy. Much appreciated to everyone who's been listening, reviewing, rating. We really enjoyed doing this. And now we've got an actual game to talk about. I believe last week we previewed Kansas, and then a day after it got canceled. So hopefully we're not going to be bad luck here, but it does seem like everything is on. And it's going to be on Friday, 11 a.m., an early one, as Iowa State comes into town. We'll get to that in a little bit, but kind of more macro, at least for Iowa State and Texas, is the Big 12 and that race. Paul, we said before the year that we thought the Big 12 was going to be down. We thought maybe some of the quarterback play was going to be down. I would say the quarterback play almost all across the board, including the two guys will be in that Friday matchup, has been down. All in all, it's kind of lived up to the Big 12 that we thought.
Yeah, it has. And it's interesting that a couple of guys who are proven assets, right, Brock Purdy and Sam Ehlinger, have had down years, at least compared to the year previous. And it'll be interesting. I think we're going to preview that game and we'll talk about it. I think ultimately, whichever defensive coordinator is able to hold down the other team's passing game, I think that's going to be the team that wins the contest on Friday.
Yep, I agree. As long as Texas doesn't go back to the tackling that they had the beginning of the year, then at that point, that's how Breece Hall's gotten a lot of his big touchdown runs and big runs, is that he'll pop some really big ones. So as long as they tackle well, I agree with you. It's going to come down probably to who plays better with Brock Purdy and Sam, and then on the flip side of that, which defense actually defends them.
Yep. Yeah, there's a game plan for both Texas and Iowa State, and the game plans are pretty similar. We'll talk about that. This is known as foreshadowing in the business, Kevin.
It's a tease.
This is what we're doing here for the listener. But we will cut to the chase on one thing, and that is we're going to talk about the actual Big 12 title race. How is it going to break down if Texas does get through Iowa State? Who are they going to face if Iowa State does beat Texas? What's their road look like? So there's really four teams in contention now, unless I'm mistaken. Is that right?
Let me see here. I'm looking at it. Yeah.
So
that's
Iowa
right.
State,
you got Iowa State at 6-1.
Yeah.
Oklahoma at 5-2. Texas and Oklahoma State at 4-2. Then you've got West Virginia and Kansas State behind them at 4-3.
Yeah, and I don't think, I mean, there could be theoretically a possibility of West Virginia or Kansas State, but that's not happening.
No, I'm with you. Yeah, so we're talking about four teams, and one to me right now that looks better than the other three.
Is that Oklahoma?
No, that's Texas. I think, no, it is Oklahoma. Yeah, I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Oklahoma right now, it's funny, I understand why they fought so hard for the drug guys that were suspended. They're pretty good players.
Yeah. It turns out those guys, they like to party and they like to play. Ronnie Perkins, he can party and he can play D-line.
DeMondre Stevenson, running back, who's, you know, their run game has really gotten going again, Paul. And that, you know, that was for people that either don't know football or don't look at it very closely. It was real easy with highlights to think that Lincoln Riley's offense was predicated on these big throwbacks and these huge bombs down the field. They get that, but they get that because their running game is so good. And that run game seems to have found itself.
Yeah, it's irritating for me to watch a team on both sides of the ball get better every week, because OU's defense was very vulnerable early in the year, and their offense was not good. It just wasn't good. And they've gotten a little better each week. I still don't think they're a good team. God help them if they make the college football playoff. But, I think they're in a sweet spot. Even though they're not in the conference lead, they own tiebreakers over Texas and over Oklahoma State.
Right.
And that's incredibly valuable to them. Now, Iowa State does have the tiebreaker over them, but Iowa State's sort of road is a little more straightforward, right? Which is if they beat Texas – head-to-head, and they don't get upset by West Virginia, they're playing for the Big 12 title. And I think even if they get upset by West Virginia,
and if they beat Texas, they'd be 7-2 at that point.
They'd be 7-2, and they'd have tiebreakers over Texas and OU. So effectively, they've got the inside track on the Big 12 title game. The game they don't want to lose is to Texas in Austin.
Yeah. Yep, you're right, because that is their tiebreaker. So, I mean, look, Iowa State, they got to feel like they're playing for everything this Friday. And obviously Texas, I mean, just to stay alive, and they've got to win as well. Now, if Texas wins out, then that would put them at 7-2, assuming they still remake that Kansas game. And there's a chance that, let's see here. Yeah, there's obviously a good chance that any of these could come together. But at that point, Texas would feel pretty good if they get that Iowa State win, having that tiebreaker, and at that point thinking, okay, we got the tiebreaker over Oklahoma State too. We're going to play Oklahoma in the Big 12 championship.
That's it, 100%. The only thing that could happen, which would be amazing, would be if Oklahoma chokes against either West Virginia on the road or against Baylor at home. And that would give, obviously, Iowa State or Oklahoma State new life, and that would be great by my book. I'm not interested in watching another Texas OU game where I get invested that we're gonna win and we're gonna pull it off, and you know, there's some element or time period in the game action where I actually start to think that's gonna happen, and then OU does what they typically have done in the last, oh, I don't know, 20 years against us.
Right.
So it's getting old. I'd like to see a different opponent. However, if that is the opponent, we get the Big 12 title game, bring it. I'd rather play them. I'd rather play in that game or rather than not. Believe it or not, Oklahoma State still has a path forward.
Yeah.
They don't have tiebreakers against I just triggered Alexa.
Oh, I was going to say, what's going on? Is that your dog?
No, I just triggered Alexa.
I know. I can hear it now.
Well, unfortunately, I said her. Shut up. I said her name, which triggers her again. By the way, I was having a, I was calling a phone help thing on like my credit card, and the name of the service representative was Alexa. And every time I would say her name, mine would kick on and be like, "How can I help you, Paul?" And she was just dying laughing on the other side. So probably not the first time that's happened to her. But
no.
All right, I'm going to move forward without the girl that this computer girl voice that lives with Hal from what's the Stanley Kubrick movie with Hal? God, why am I blanking?
Oh, the
2001 Space Odyssey. What is it? Is that
yeah? It isn't Hal in the title.
I feel like Hal. No. Hal's the name of the computer system.
Okay.
He's the AI that is turns evil and turns on his masters. And I feel like she's going to do that to me one day. But, so Oklahoma State actually does have a road forward, believe it or not, as sort of poorly as they play. They lost those tiebreaker games to Texas and OU. They got crushed by OU. And what is it, Gundy now 2-14 against the Sooners?
2-14, and he even said today, he said, yesterday, I underestimated some of their personnel on both sides. I think he was talking about Ronnie Perkins. And as you've talked about him, you got to be careful when you're looking at film. If you look at Oklahoma and their offensive line early in the year, they had veteran guys, but they weren't playing very well, and that even goes to the Texas game. But they've gotten better and better. They've got the best offensive line coach in the Big 12, one of the best in the country.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go
ahead. No. I mean, but the point of that is they're just getting a lot better. So that's why I kind of had that reaction when you said Oklahoma State still has a path. You're right, but they are trending the wrong way. They've got no offense. They've got really no quarterback right now. Spencer Sanders is just not taking that sophomore leap that he needed to.
Yep, that's correct. And I just find it amusing. Obviously, Gundy's a good coach, and he's done great things there. But I find it amusing that the coach who was 2-13 going into that game has to come out after and be like, yeah, I just kind of underestimated him.
Yeah, I know, right. I didn't take their personnel seriously. Really?
You know, I guess the 11th time they beat me, I started to take them seriously. The 12th and 13th times, I kind of thought it was fluky. And then coming into this week, I really felt like this was our week. Guys, now 2-14.
Well,
great.
Well, hey, let's get into this a little bit, because there's two teams in the Big 12, two programs that aren't real happy with their guys. At least there's a large portion of the fan base. And actually, I should say more than two, because obviously that's happening in Austin as well. But the two that I'm thinking of right now are Oklahoma State and TCU. I'd be careful. I mean, because you got the two best coaches in program history, respectively, for those programs. Are they at the end of the run? Yeah, they are. But you want to make sure that you're set up to continue what those guys kind of built, even if it is losing to OU seemingly every year. OU is a top four program of all time. Oklahoma State, you have to kind of have an understanding of where you are in the atmosphere.
Yeah, I think that's correct. And I think what's interesting, obviously, Gary Patterson has been amazing at TCU. And I've joked about it, but underneath the joke, as with many jokes, is there's some underlying truth or kernel of reality. And that is when head coaches are 20 years in and they start recording country albums and, like, taking up woodworking.
Take a step back.
Yeah, they take up woodworking, or they take a class in improv, or they start traveling to Europe with their wife in the summer. They actually learn the names of their kids. Hey man, that's a head coach that's not so invested anymore in the monomaniacal investment that you need from a head man for a program like that. And I think Gary Patterson's in the twilight of his career. And, you know, TCU has to obviously acknowledge what he's brought. It's almost like a Bill Snyder type situation. Not quite as severe, but, yeah, I think you have to acknowledge what he's brought you, but also understand there's a time very soon where you're going to need to move forward. And then, I don't know, I think on the other side of the equation, what's kind of interesting to me is Texas fans, you know, many of them had their fill of Herman. But what about poor Iowa State? So what happens if Iowa State beats Texas? They go to the Big 12 title game. They play OU. I will be rooting for the Cyclones if that game happens. And Matt Campbell has this Cinderella season. Is he just going to be coaching the Michigan Wolverines in about 3 months?
Yeah, I think there's a really good chance. And it's kind of helped him out because P.J. Fleck would have been another one of those Midwest names. And P.J. Fleck, some of the shine's been taken off that with the type of year that they've had. Yeah, I had the feeling my prediction would be this is Matt Campbell's last year. But I've also heard that he's a Midwest guy and there's three jobs that he wants. He wants Ohio State, Notre Dame, or Michigan. Well, Ohio State, Notre Dame don't seem to be opening up anytime soon. Certainly not Ohio State. Michigan would be that job. I'd be careful if I'm Michigan hiring him. I think Matt Campbell's done a really good job at Iowa State. Those guys don't always transition well. Sometimes they do, but when you get to a bigger program, because you've got not only different expectations, but how you build it can be a little different. But yeah, I mean, I would think that he's going to be one of those names that is circulated, and there's a good chance Matt Campbell could be gone. Iowa State, if I'm an Iowa State fan, I'd be looking at this year as this is it.
Yeah, well, and look, P.J. Fleck did sort of undermine his resume, his credibility, and I think moved from that, ooh, this is the hot new guy that all the the teams are going to be competing over. James Franklin's still available, though, Kevin.
Oh, God. Look, I know you're kidding, and Penn State has not won a game this year. I will give myself some credit. Not for 1 second. At Vanderbilt, or even when he was having these Saquon good 9-10-win seasons at Penn State, did I buy him as a really, really good coach. He's certainly not an X's and O's guy. He's more of a Mac Brown. And save the email. I obviously know you can win with Mac, but there's something that comes with that. And he's a marketer to me. He's an advertiser. That's what he does. He's in advertising. That's what he does.
Yeah, I mean, he can talk a buzzard off a meat truck.
Oh, man, great at it.
I mean, he makes Mac Brown look like a stuttering buffoon. I mean, Mac Brown's a pretty glib guy, right, who can hold forth and dress it up. And, you know, he'll talk about the water boy like this is the best water boy in America.
What a good kid.
He's absolutely vital, this program. Hydration's important. Dehydration's killing a lot of programs right now.
We don't win this game without Timmy.
Yeah, Franklin, man, he's – sometimes you close your eyes and you think you're listening to the Gettysburg Address or I Have a Dream by Martin Luther King. The guy can talk.
Yeah, and he sells it. I mean, he sounds like this is a guy I want to go play for. I'm not buying it, though. Not buying it at all.
He is 100% the I Stayed at a Holiday Inn Express football coach. Right? Like his manner, the way. It's like when you get on a plane and you look and the pilot is a guy late 40s, early 50s, salt and pepper hair, nice mustache, clearly was in the Navy or the Air Force. You know, his name is Ron or Dave or Ted. And he gets on and he has like a nice little baritone to his voice. You know, folks, we're going to be flying at 37,000 feet to Albuquerque. And you guys just sit back and you instantly, when you see that, you're like, all right, this guy may have been grounded by the FAA. He may have multiple warning and conduct warnings on his record. He may be a raging alcoholic, but he gives the absolute appearance of competence and like, this is a pilot, right?
Right.
That's how I feel about James Franklin sometimes when you watch him in a press conference. You get mesmerized.
You're right. Yeah. Well, in terms of pilots, I'd rather have that. I'd rather have him hoodwink me that way than see him at the bar before.
I thought you were going to say something like, I really would prefer to see a strong woman.
Oh, well, I don't care. Just kidding. Yeah, no, I'm not going to virtue signal like that. I just want a damn good pilot. And yes, Paul, women can be good pilots.
I actually don't know if that's allowed.
Drivers? Pilots? Really good, though.
So you'd rather have a female pilot than a female Uber driver?
Oh, without a doubt. That's an easy one, right?
Well,
it depends how hot she is.
Ooh, that's a good thought. You know, apparently male Uber drivers, if you get them talking, some of those guys will tell you that they have some late night offers.
Oh, I bet they do. No, that's probably a pretty good gig right there. Not lubed up either. Already been drinking and feeling good. And yeah. I mean, you're already there. You've already got the hardest thing is to get back to her place. You're dropping her off there.
That's it. Yeah. Apparently that's a thing. At least that's the word on the street. That's the word on the Uber street here in San Francisco.
Have you quizzed Uber drivers about that?
I quiz the shit out of my Uber drivers, actually.
I do too.
If the guy has an accent,
yep.
And anything relevantly interesting about his nationality,
yep.
I play the tell me about your homeland game.
Yep.
I've had deep involved discussions with my Uber drivers. If the guy right out of the bat is just, you know, not interested in talking or he's kind of boring, then I just clam up and put in some headphones and you know, do my thing. But yeah, if the guy's remotely interesting, I talked to a guy. I got stuck in traffic one time coming back from SFO. I talked to a guy who had been an interpreter for an Army Ranger division in Afghanistan.
Damn.
And based on his commendations, and apparently this guy did a lot more than just interpret. He was strapped. He was carrying a weapon. Based on what he did for that unit, they sponsored him and got him citizenship here in the U.S.
Wow, that's a really cool story.
Yeah, and he broke down every tribal rivalry, like Karzai. He was telling me how like crooked Karzai really was, even though he's painted as this you know, noble guy. He was talking about the tensions between different ethnicities and who takes whose side against who. And he's talking about the Pakistani border and, you know, the Baluchistan and how the PAKs don't even control that area, really. And just getting into it, just deep dive on Afghanistan. And by the end of it, I had basically had like a little, it was like listening to an iTunes podcast about, you know, with an Afghan expert. And it was super interesting. And what he got into was there, you know, we'll quickly get off on a tangent, but he said a lot more of the motivations in Afghanistan are monetary and crime related.
I believe that.
Than actually religion or Islamic or the way it's painted. Now, obviously, that's a huge factor, but he said, There's a huge Haqqani network. It's a group, basically an extended group, a family group of basically criminals, super criminals who live in Afghanistan, who are really the guys who operate and run big portions of that country. And the Taliban initially, who came in as a sort of a revivalist movement to overthrow the corruption, have quickly become just as corrupt. And he said, you know, what really motivates them is the dollar.
Right.
And a lot of the USAID projects have corrupted them, and because they know that there's billions and or millions and hundreds of millions of dollars that they can funnel off and steal and then do all sorts of things. So anyway, these are the things you can learn from your Uber drivers. Make sure you talk to them, folks.
So what you're telling me is Afghanistan, as pious as the people may be there, it's like every other place in the world, right?
Yeah, in addition to selling children right and left.
Yeah, yeah. And I was talking more about the money, greed, and corruption there. I did that in New York City. I mean, and I almost feel like I'm discriminating against my own race, I guess white people. But if there was someone, any foreigner or any accent, I really wanted to learn about kind of that culture. And there are times where you get to your destination and it's like, man, I wish I had five more minutes. You don't say that very often in a cab.
You're right. Yeah, probably the most interesting thing beyond the conversations with the Uber drivers is this conversation with you. You consider Irish people to be white?
Oh, Lord. Yeah. Well, we weren't when we came over, apparently. But, hey.
No, you had to earn your whiteness.
I'm not. I'm American, Paul. Deal with that.
Oh, I like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I'm American. God.
That's the patriotic Kevin Dunn we all know and loathe.
You said loathe.
I think I combined the two words. All right. We need to talk about the Iowa State Cyclones. But before we do that, Kevin, I want to talk about our sponsor. Tom Herman and the Texas Longhorns may get a three-week bye week, but you know who never takes a week off?
Gabe.
Gabe Winslow. He and his mortgage team are fantastic. Look, you got a little time on your hands over the holidays. Perhaps you're looking at the year. You're looking at some of the things that you're going to be doing in the new year, thinking about your finances, thinking about your house. Would you like to put a little money in your pocket? You want to lower your house payment? You want to take a little cash out of your house? Give Gabe a call, 832-557-1095. Also, and I know a lot of people are relocating. In fact, I live around a lot of Californians who are all relocating to Texas or Boise or Montana or Albuquerque, New Mexico. And you probably need a house. You probably need a great mortgage. You probably need a low mortgage with a guy who's going to deliver on time, no BS, and he's going to give you a special deal because he loves this podcast. He loves the Texas Longhorns. You mention us, the EGAT podcast. He's going to give you $500 off of closing. He's going to give you a great rate. You're going to close probably early, and you're going to have a great experience with Gabe. Give him a call, 832-557-1095. Let's talk about the Iowa State Cyclone football team. Kevin, what you got?
They're well coached. It gets back to what you said earlier, watching Oklahoma. It gets frustrating. We talked about it on the talk show today that – It's frustrating watching kids get developed and maybe doing more with less, and when the sum is more than the individual parts. And it feels like Iowa State with Campbell and Haycock, since he went to that inverted Tampa 2, as our boy Ian Boyd likes to call it, and that makes sense. I mean, I think that's a good title. It fits. That they play around with with what they have, and they do a good job, and they maximize their talent. They've got some talented guys. I like Jaquan Bailey on the defensive line. I like Mike Rose. We'll get into that here in a second and his availability at linebacker. Mike Rose is up for defensive player of the year in this conference. I mean, he's going to be one of the finalists and should be. And then they've got a pretty veteran secondary. All the guys return. No one really stands out. Eisworth's a good player. Greg Eisworth, their safety, and 6 feet, 200 pounds. And I guess he stands out a little bit, but it's really how they're structured. And Haycock created this because he was getting screwed without being able to, you know, to substitute. And you've got all these tempo offenses, and he would try and have maybe a bigger defensive line out there for a jumbo package, and then all of a sudden they're hurrying up, and he needs his nickel or dime out there. So his thought was, I'm going to create a defense where we're going to have our 11 best guys out there so we don't have to worry about constantly trying to sub guys in and out. And we're going to work off of that. It's really looking at your talent and the schemes that are going on in your conference and building something around that. We haven't had that a lot in Austin.
No, we haven't. And you nailed it in the sense of Haycock being a maximizer and also an innovator. Because sometimes those two things don't go hand in hand,
right?
Not only in life, but coaching. A lot of times there's idea men, but they can't implement. Right?
Yeah.
And you see people who go start a fire. Right? Fire starters. But boy, they don't stick around to make sure it stays focused and doesn't burn up a bunch of parkland nearby, right?
Yeah.
And Haycock seems like one of these guys who both has a very methodical personality, but he also sort of thinks out of the box. And that's not very common in the world. It's not very common in coaching.
No, it's not. That's a fantastic point. I hadn't really put that together, but you're right. And he has both those skill sets, and they're pretty rare, not only in coaching, as you said, but just finding that in anyone. Mike Rose did see on Twitter, and we know that Twitter never lies, Paul, but there was a report coming out of the Midwest, that coming out of Iowa, that Mike Rose is dealing with a lower body injury, and he may not play in this game. That's going to be up in the air. So that would help Texas out a lot, because I've been really impressed with Rose. I liked him last year, but I feel like he's taking his game to the next level.
Yeah, Rose has – this is a very experienced defense, and Rose has 34 career starts. He has been starting for Iowa State since he was a freshman. When he came in as a freshman, Kevin, he was about 6'4", 210, and a very good high school basketball player in Ohio, I believe. And he just was one of these guys that obviously Iowa State and Haycock understand what they want in a linebacker. They want a guy who can move. They can run. He wants baseline athleticism. He loved the length. You know, Rose is 6'4". And he figured, hey, I can add some weight and strength to him, which, of course, you can do. That's the easiest thing to do in sports. Add weight and strength to a young athletic male. It's not very hard.
No.
And that's exactly what they did. He's a great player. And he leads the Big 12 linebacking group in interceptions. He has 4 on the year. He leads Iowa State in interceptions as well. And he's actually in the top 10 of the Big 12 in interceptions, all positions. So he is a very good player. He gets great drops. He's long. He plays the run well. He's very active. He can kind of do everything. I think he's an NFL player. And Jaquan Bailey, you mentioned him, and I'm glad you did. He's a very underrated, I think, player who doesn't quite get the press he deserves. He's had 45 career starts for Iowa State.
Wow.
He's one of those guys that's seemingly perpetual eligibility.
Yeah.
And he's a good player. He's 6'2", 260. He's rugged enough to play inside. He can play a 3 technique, or he can line up outside and beat your tackle around the edge. Good player all around, very disruptive against the run. An above-average pass rusher, not a great pass rusher. In many ways, he reminds me of what Malcolm Roach would have been at Texas if he hadn't added the extra 30 to 40 pounds.
That
if he had just
is...
stayed at his 260.
Wow, that's a good one. I've been trying to comp him, and you got to obviously put some things together there. So Malcolm didn't add that weight and was utilized correctly. Yeah, I like that. I like that comp.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of an amazing comp now that I think about it.
No, it's pretty damn good.
No, that is Jaquan. And then, as you said, they have an experienced secondary. Eisworth, another one of these guys who seems like he's been there forever. I think he's had 29 career starts. He's very good in run support. And he's good at run support from depth. For those of you who remember Deshaun Elliott, of course, who played for Orlando in his first year, Deshaun was a really good safety, not only just sort of making the plays he should when that defense funneled opportunities to him. You know, he had a lot of interceptions, but he was really good at coming up against the run from depth.
Yeah.
It's easier to defend the run when you're playing safety and you're pulled up on the line. You're the eighth man at the line of the scrimmage, but it's hard to do it when you've got a big alley and you're coming from 12 feet deep and the running back's got a two-way to go. And it's kind of you and the running back one-on-one. Deshaun Elliott plays in the NFL and starts for the Ravens because he can make that tackle 99 times out of 100. Same thing as Greg Eisworth. That is his superpower. And it's one of the ways that Haycock can show off coverage and sort of a light box, but he'll actually have those safeties sprinting to the line of scrimmage at the snap, and you are actually running against an eight-man de facto box. It's one of his little sleight-of-hand tricks to do. No one has run on Iowa State all year except the Oklahoma State Cowboys. You can throw on them, particularly if you're patient. They're giving up 7.5 yards per attempt to opposing quarterbacks. Will Tom Herman understand that? Or do you think Texas is going to try to establish the run for a quarter and a half?
I think they're going to try and establish the run. And I think that's a mistake. But I've kind of said that throughout a majority of the year. And I think you've been on board with that. It's just kind of understanding, you know, what you like to do and what you do well. And a lot of times those things are separate. So I'm worried that they're going to bang their head against the wall and it's going to take a little bit too long and they're going to put themselves in a spot that's too hard to get out of. I mean, that's been a problem with Tom Herman the 4 years. That's probably a fair criticism.
Well, and I think that criticism is founded if you look at what happened in Ames last year.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Because
that one pisses me off maybe more than any other game plan since Herman's been here.
Yeah, I've written extensively about it. I've talked about it. People are probably tired of me talking about it, but it was emblematic in a lot of ways of what's good about Herman and his teams and what's bad about Herman and how he manages games. Obviously, there was a famous turtle incident late in that game when Texas had the lead. And, of course, they ended up punting after some give-up plays. Connor Ass Alley, the appropriately named kicker for Iowa State, put it up our alley with the game-winning field goal. But I don't know if you recall, Kevin, but in that game, Texas's offense was horrible. They kept trying to run the ball. They ended up rushing for 54 yards in the game.
Right.
Most of that yardage was from Sam Ellinger. Texas had 13 offensive possessions. 10 of those 13 offensive possessions were either a 3-and-out, 8 3-and-outs, or 2 6-and-outs, which is where you get one first down and go 3-and-out.
Yeah, it's as close to a 3-and-out as you can get. And obviously you just extend it. You get one first down. It also, the thing I remember about that game is it really the offensive line looked as bad as they had. I mean, I know they gave up 9 sacks to Oklahoma and West Virginia was bad, but last year they looked awful. I mean, really the only play last year against Iowa State that I remember working was Sam just playing backyard football.
Yeah, it was 5 wide, backyard football. Sam would drop back. He would read. If he saw someone open, he'd throw it. If he didn't, he'd take off running and gain 10 yards. And Texas did that running tempo 3 times in the game. 3 times Texas had long drives, 75 yards, 80 yards, and 89 yards, all touchdowns, running exactly that methodology. Anytime they didn't do that, it was a 3-and-out or a 6-and-out. And what's hilarious is Texas was – sort of forced into it out of desperation at the end of the first half. Iowa State sort of dominating the game. Texas gets the ball, moves right down the field, 7 points. Herman goes back to his game plan in the third quarter. Late in the third quarter, early fourth, he throws the ball in Sam's hands and says, go get him. They go 4 and 5 wide. Sam drives for a touchdown. Texas, you know, it's now 2014. Same thing. Texas gets the ball back. Sam takes them on a long drive doing the same thing. Now it's 21-20. Of course, they get another stop. Texas gets the ball, and that's when you have that turtle incident. Iowa State drives. And I mean, it's like a guy just beating himself. It's like watching your friend who's incredibly talented and gifted and has all sorts of ability, but he just keeps making the same mistakes over and over with the girls he chooses, the substances he abuses, whatever it is. It's just something hardwired in this human being to keep shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to put it, and it's really frustrating. So we'll see. I mean, here's one good thing that Tom Herman, when his staffs have had 3 weeks off or longer, that's when they've done really well, going back to Houston. And it may not be the most inventive game plan, but they kind of fine-tune stuff and maybe add some wrinkles. That's why they've been really good in bowl games.
That's a good point. You know, maybe this 3-week pause, and really 1 week was prepping Kansas.
Right.
But Texas has had 2 weeks prepping Iowa State.
Yeah. And getting healthy.
Maybe that translates into a bowl game-like sort of performance. And we did see the move to the gap blocking scheme. They finally quit trying to run outside zone, and they moved to the back gap blocking scheme against West Virginia. Maybe they've had 3 weeks to rep that now, and maybe they're going to be more fluent. And hell, I just talked a bunch of trash saying don't try to go establish the run. Maybe Texas is going to come out and run the hell out of the ball because they're going to actually present a little bit of a different look than what Iowa State's expecting, and they're going to be actually coherent and run it with good execution. So who knows?
Yeah, if they do that, then – and I talked about it on the show – Texas can be so simple and so predictable that you got to be able – it sucks to be that, and you want to change that. But as you are that, and since you're stuck in that, and that's the perception in reality, well, you can actually play around with that right now before you go make some drastic changes in the offseason so you're stopped being predictable.
Yeah, well, I tell you what. I mean,
you can play off of that, though. You can say, well, we're so predictable. Like you said, you could still – run basic runs, but just change up the blocking scheme a little bit, and it may throw them off.
Yeah, well, we have a couple of national titles and we being Texas, yeah, I'm taking responsibility for something I had nothing to do with. But
especially that 69 title.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. You have exactly that 69 title.
You weren't even born yet, you dumbass.
Well, I'm a 69 fan.
Yeah, you are, but that. Alexa knows that. She has to see it all the time.
Think about, don't say it too loud. It'll trigger her. But DKR, famously, is this incredibly conservative, some would say predictable coach, but some of his greatest moments as a coach at Texas, whether 63, 69, 70, it's doing things that are counterintuitive, contrarian, unexpected, and Texas reaping huge outsized benefits from that.
Nebraska did that for a long time well.
There's no question. You know, every now and then, Tom Osborne would get his passing game on, and it would just shock the opposing team.
Yeah, well, we're not going to see 69 Texas or 95 Nebraska on Friday, but we are going to see some pretty damn good tight ends, and unfortunately, that's really on the Iowa State side. Jared Wiley should be back, and I hope that he can get in. But just to look at their offensive personnel, Breece Hall is your offensive player of the year in the Big 12 right now, and I don't even think it's that close. I mean, usually a quarterback would be on that, and Rattler's been the best quarterback, but he's not going to win that thing. And then Chuba Hubbard was the other guy, and Chuba Hubbard has not had the type of year Breece Hall has had. He's fantastic.
Hall's been tremendous. And what's interesting is, for a power back, he's a 6'1", 250-pound guy who runs with a lot of power. He breaks long runs. And you said that what the hallmark of his long runs is, he breaks a tackle and gets some space, and he is gone. He's got enough long speed, and he keeps housing long runs. And you can see it. He's averaging 6.5 yards a carry. In 8 games, he's gone over 100 yards in every single game. So Texas, I would argue, probably has the best run defense that he will see.
Yeah.
And
it's the best run defense in the Big 12, right?
Yeah, I think so. And particularly when Texas wants to, right? I mean, I think when Texas puts in Moro Ojomo at defensive end, and they tell Osai, play run first, and they really get Keandre Coburn or Tavondre Sweat to hunker down in there. It's good luck running on Texas. You're really counting on Juwan Mitchell missing a tackle if you're trying to get something going in the run game.
In terms of the tight ends, though, this is the advantage Iowa State has. And to me, they're kind of a poor man's Notre Dame. Not that poor, but Notre Dame's got is a better team than Iowa State. But they both use 3 or 4 tight ends, and the way they use them, they can really mess you up. I talked about the Irish last week or the week before after their win against Clemson. And Iowa State does a lot of the same things. So you've got 88 Charlie Kohler, who's a guy you've probably seen or heard of from Norman. He's the guy who was preseason All-American and gets a lot of love. Chase Allen is a former receiver, number 11. He's got the long hair. He looks like he deals on the side names. Maybe he does. But he was a receiver that they put some weight on. He's 6'7", 240. And then the other guy who may actually be the best pro prospect, really good run blocker, but he can also do some stuff in the catching the ball, and that's Dylan Sainer. And he's 6'7", 272. They'll split all those guys out, but like I talked about with the Irish, if you want to go dime, well, then they'll go to jumbo. And you got a guy like Breece Hall and Purdy who can run. That's going to be the biggest challenge for me with Texas. They're going to force you to play your hand with personnel. Can Texas be versatile enough when they go to jumbo, or whenever you go to more of a run-stopping package, then all of a sudden they say, oh, no, we're splitting it out and we're going to spread it out?
That's a great point. And here's the, thank God, the Achilles heel of Iowa State. They've really struggled at receiver.
Yeah.
And Texas fans kind of know what struggles at receiver look like this year. They've had more. And they've really missed slot receiver Tariq Milton. He's their speed guy in the slot. He hasn't been around. He's not going to be around for the Texas game. Iowa State listed him on their depth chart as if he's going to play. He's not playing.
Okay, so I saw that. I was going to ask you. I thought Milton was out for the year, but I see him on the depth chart. So they're just playing games with that.
They're just playing games. And, you know, typical Iowan, always working an angle.
Yeah, but always hoodwinking you.
That's right. Fast-talking man from Des Moines. But they do have a guy, Xavier Hutchinson, who is their big-body outside receiver, who's out there to try to create that stretch and try to create those big plays. He's 6'3", 210.
JUCO kid.
He has played better of late.
Yeah.
He had 111 yards against Kansas State. But the teams that have been able to single cover Iowa State's wide receivers and then just jam up the middle of the field with bodies so that they take away that those tight end routes, or at least the easy tight end routes, they'll concede whatever to Breece Hall. He can get his 120 yards. But if Purdy can't throw the ball, Iowa State's offense is just not going to put the points up on the board. And the teams that have effectively done that, surprisingly, it may surprise you who the teams are that have done that. Louisiana, obviously in the opener, dominated Iowa State's offense. Okie State really stuck it to them. And Baylor. They all did a really good job of single covering those Iowa State receivers, putting a bunch of bodies and two safeties in the middle for those tight ends, and then just kind of saying, yeah, Breece Hall gets what he gets. And that's been an effective game plan, and it's really limited and held down Brock Purdy, who was, frankly, a superstar last year in the Big 12, and for many people, the highest-rated NFL prospect in the Big 12. He's had a tough year, and he's had some up and down. So he's had some big games where he has been able to connect downfield. He's also had some games where he's really been held down, and he's put down some pretty anemic stat lines.
Yeah, I think Purdy and Sam share kind of some of the same frustrations and struggles, and both have not been nearly as good as they can be or have been. So let's not take any of the blame away from them on that. But as a quarterback especially, there can be a lot of things that go into it. Both have had offensive lines that don't do a great job of protecting and will let guys slide through. And I think there's a little bit of the David Carr syndrome, not nearly as much, obviously, but where they've been hit enough, they're kind of looking for that. And both have had problems with receivers getting open. And that gets back to your point about Milton being gone and the JUCO kid who is coming on. You're right about that, Xavier Hutchinson. You shouldn't overlook him. 6'3", 207, and will stretch. Seems to be getting more comfortable. But their receivers have had problems getting open. The Texas receivers have had problems getting open. Both offensive lines have been spotty with pass pro at times. And you get quarterbacks that I think at times are trying to do too much. Certainly Purdy.
So was it first team to 24 wins the game? Or do you think that both offensive coordinators will sort of manufacture something?
I'm kind of leaning more to the 24. It may be a little bit more than that, but I don't expect to see a real high scoring game, no. What about you?
Yeah, I think you're right. No, I'm exactly right. And I love your comparison of Sam and Purdy, because these are both proven veteran, highly regarded quarterbacks, right? Considered number one and number two in the conference coming into the year. And they both struggled. And if you're a Texas fan who only watches Texas games, it's very easy to hyper-focus on Sam and sort of put some of the issues the offense has had solely on him. He has had some issues, but there's a larger macroscape that he's operating in. And to a lesser extent, Brock Purdy has experienced the same thing at Iowa State. And, you know, Tom Brady, pretty damn good quarterback, but when he doesn't have anyone to throw to, as his last couple of years in New England, and he runs into a good defense, it looks pretty ugly.
Yeah, it does. And he doesn't look like the GOAT anymore.
Yeah, there's just not a lot you can do as a quarterback. If the protection's not holding up and your receivers aren't open, people say, you know, make a play. And it's like, well, you know, you make a play. Like, what's your plan?
Yeah.
Because they're wondering what their plan is every time they're dropping back.
So Purdy definitely was forcing stuff early on in the year and was trying to do too much. Evident of the TCU interception was, you know the one I'm talking about, wherever he's getting sacked
about, yeah.
And he just flings it up in the air behind him, like 5 yards behind him and to the left. He was trying to get to the sideline, but no one was there except for a TCU guy that usually would have been blasted on film. Yo, what are you doing over there, man?
You're just a no man's land hanging out.
What the hell are you doing? The play's still going on. And it hits the TCU guy right in the chest, and he goes back for a pick six. It was shocking to see that from Purdy, but it kind of told you, all right, this guy's trying to do too much. So maybe, which quarterback can compose themselves and not try and do too much, and then also get that requisite help from the offensive line and receivers. Whoever gets that wins this game.
Well, and I will say this. Say what you will about the Longhorn offense, and you and I have said a lot.
Yeah.
Sam Ehlinger is not turning the ball over.
No, he's been good with that.
And honestly, he should be. If you look at the hits he's taking, if you look at the protection he's getting, if you look at the burden of the offense that's being placed on him every week, he should be kind of cracking and having a couple of fumbles or interceptions every week. That's just natural to the quarterback position. But he is not doing that. And I think that's why Texas has had this little run. I think that's a big part of it, at least, you know, at least on the offensive side for their contribution.
I think that's an excellent point. Yeah, and that's why I kind of wanted to split up Purdy a little bit with that. Purdy has definitely done that. Sam's actually been good. He's been off, and he's been inaccurate, so like Purdy had been until last week. The other thing, too, I mentioned it last week a little bit, and I was talking more about Purdy, but you could be saying the same thing in Ames about Sam. I'd be careful writing someone off. It's real easy to say, well, they haven't been good this year. We know both these guys have good football in them and really good quarterback play in them. And if that sneaks out, like if Purdy found something last week in the blowout against Kansas State, or maybe Sam got healthy with the 20 days off, that's where all of a sudden that low scoring thing could be out the window.
Well, and that's the thing about football that I love. It's the thing about sports that I love.
Yes.
Is we think we know, but we don't know.
No.
We really don't know. And if we really did know, you just listen to the podcast and not watch the game.
Yeah.
But
in Vegas, if we really did know, Vegas wouldn't be around.
That's exactly right. You would not have those pretty buildings with elaborate fountains and beautiful showgirls running around. That stuff didn't get built on losing.
No.
At least on the Vegas side. So, yeah, I just think that's what's great about sports is you always have the ability to be surprised. And that surprise can come in good and bad ways. So I'm looking for good surprises on Friday. I think, obviously, I couched it as whichever defensive coordinator does a better job against the other team's passing game will win. Well, the other way you could say that is whichever quarterback is money is going to be the team that wins, or at least whoever is more money. And I'll tell you what, if you're thinking about your money, is there someone that should be talking to out there?
God, you look, we may be miles apart, but we're just eye to eye, brother, eye to eye. Yeah, you need a good coordinator to take care of that money and to make you more money. And our coordinator is David McClellan. Great guy, fiduciary financial advisor from Forum Financial, won multiple national championships as a Texas swimmer here, and he's taken that winning to his professional life. He specializes in financial life coaching, also retirement planning. So many things are changing right now. So it's a free consultation. Give him a call. We've had some listeners that have done it. They all said thank you very much for pushing us to go ahead and make that phone call. Obviously, if it's your money, I mean, you know, sometimes that can be a little tricky. You want someone you can really trust. It's not going to take you long when you talk to David and really see his resume, see what he's done. He's seen this industry and this business from every single angle, but he's done a heck of a job at Forum Financial. So part of that consultation, David will help you understand your financial freedom number. That is what it sounds like. And maybe some things you could be doing differently to build your wealth and also achieve financial freedom faster. Give him a call. Tell him you heard it on the podcast. It's a free consultation. 312-933-8823. 312, shout out Chicago, 933-8823. No matter where you're at, he can work with you. You can email him as well, dmcclellan@forumfin.com.
I love it. You guys, please support our sponsors. They've been amazing, and they have been incredibly supportive of the folks who have called them. They've all been really glad about it. We've gotten glowing recommendations and reviews on people who have interacted with both Gabe and David. One thing I will say, if you want to help us out, please go on iTunes, subscribe, rate, and review. I think 1 week or two, I didn't post the podcast on Inside Texas. And by the way, if you're not a subscriber to Inside Texas, you should get on there. There have been some awesome things going on there, and you need to come be a part of it. But I didn't post the podcast a couple times on Inside Texas, and people posted complaints saying, well, where can I listen? I didn't listen to the podcast. What are you doing? It's like, hey, man, are you subscribed? Because if you're subscribed, you don't need me to post the podcast.
You'll know.
Get it into your feed. You get it downloaded straight into your brain, and you get your Longhorn fix and hopefully laugh a couple of times. So go ahead. Go to iTunes. Give it a subscription. rate and review this podcast and continue to support us, and we'll keep giving you some good content.
We appreciate it. All right, man, I got a sick cat. I got to get back to that. And you're teaching now. You've got your son, and you're not doing any plans tonight, are you? No lesson plans?
No. We do our teaching and during the day. His school got canceled because someone heard the word COVID or something like that. It's too painful to even go through the nonsense of why they canceled his school for the last 3 days of Thanksgiving. I think they just wanted to add to the Thanksgiving holiday the staff. But I did have, by the way, I gave my son the opportunity to take a break in between lessons. We're working on different stuff. And I go over, and my 7-year-old son has his iPad, and he's playing Grand Theft Auto on it.
What's wrong with that?
You kill cops and beat up prostitutes in this game.
All right. Well, how old is? Oh yeah, he's pretty young.
He's 7, Kevin.
Yeah. That's probably too much.
Yeah, I'm not exactly a square, but that's not going to fly with me.
Come on.
I don't think his mom bought him the game. I think he sold her a bill of goods. I don't think he quite understood what was on it, and I don't think she certainly understood. So we're gonna have a little conversation about GTA and probably get that off of his iPad ASAP.
Oh, well done, Jake. I like the move. I remember the first time my parents actually heard some of the hip-hop that I had them buying me. They were like, whoa, I didn't know you told me that it wasn't that bad. Well, in my opinion, it's not that bad.
I used to do the move at a Blockbuster Video back in the day, where you'd have like Mr. Mom and some other innocuous title, and then in between it, you'd have like an NC-17 movie, and hope your mom wouldn't see the sandwich, right?
Yep. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I remember pulling that move, or you try and put your thumb over the whatever label is trying to tell the parents that, hey, you better be careful if your kid's young with this.
Yeah, clove cigarettes or whatever the hell it was you were trying to buy.
All right,
yeah,
man.
By the way, that Blockbuster story is when I was 30, but I was living with my mom. And she was all right, guys,
that's
let's get out of here.
That's a good ender.
Let's go Texas, and we'll see you guys next week.
See ya.